Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Missing Frames. This is the podcast where we watch all the movies we should have seen by this point in our lives. I'm your host, Sean Eastridge. We're hanging out on the Nerd Party Network, a collection of podcasts dedicated to all things entertainment. Check us out at thenerdparty.com and make sure you're following us on all social media platforms. It's just at the Nerd Party and it's at Join Nerd Party on Twitter. And I am excited today to invite a dear, dear friend of mine. Not only is he a beautiful human being, he is a remarkable filmmaker, and just he's a remarkable soul. He inspires me every day. That is Mr. Miles Levine. Miles, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, this is your first time. We've known each other for years, and this is the very first Missing Frames you've ever done. How is this possible?
These are the missing frames in my life. These are the first missing frames.
The missing frame in your life was being on Missing Frames.
That's right. Now the
circle
saga continues.
The circle is complete. The saga,
the circle is unbroken.
We were, I think, kind of both quoting Star Wars, even though I don't think the saga is complete is a specific Star Wars quote. I'd like to think it can qualify as one.
Yeah, it's close.
Close. We've been talking about doing an episode. You've been, and to be fair, this is my bad. I've just been slacking and I've been a terrible, terrible friend. I'm glad you agree. Yeah, you jumped right on that. We've been wanting to do this film for a while. You specifically have suggested it to me many, many, many times, and we've been trying to schedule it. And then you were like, Sean, how could you have Amber on the show before me? I can't believe it. And you started sobbing and it really hurt me. And
I remember saying every syllable of that. Sounds like something I would say.
Every tear was real. Every teardrop was authentic. But you are a fan of this film, a film I have not seen all the way through, which is the Sandlot, I think it was 1993. Was when this film was released. I have not seen it. Although I want to be clear, I have seen bits and pieces of the film. I've seen classic moments. I recognize moments from this film. I know what it's about in general. I've seen whether it was on TV or whether it was shown at school. I have seen a lot of the movie, but I don't believe
there are
missing
frames.
Yes, there are missing frames, actual missing frames, because I don't think I've ever sat down and watched this from beginning to end. But this was the movie you were insisting on. Is this one of your favorite movies?
This is one of, if not my very favorite movie of all time.
Wow.
And I think I'm all over the map with favorite movies, so and they're not even really genre specific, but like I love like Spielberg's Lincoln and Interstellar and The Sandlot, maybe Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Those are probably all tied for first of my favorite movies ever. Yeah,
that's fantastic. And this, do you remember when you first saw The Sandlot?
I don't. I was really little. We owned it on VHS, and I watched it many, many, many times, and I'm someone, I don't really watch movies twice. I just feel like there's such a wealth of unseen things out there that if you're going to sit down, you're going to watch a movie. The beauty is in not knowing what comes next. So if you're going to watch a movie twice, it better be because it's just speaks to you so much that it's just a joyride, right? It just makes you feel that good, that it's even better than, you know, something that you might be looking forward to that you haven't seen. So I've seen The Sandlot more than any other movie in my life.
I didn't even know that. That's amazing. I feel like somehow that it both does and doesn't surprise me. Like, I can see how you would love this movie based on what I know about it, based on what I've seen of it. And were you a baseball fan growing up? Like, is this something where
not at all? No, so, no. I've always had a dog, and that's kind of my only. That's about as close as I get. Never been on a baseball team. I mean, I vaguely, like, you know, the Giants are my, like, local team, and right. sometimes they're on TV, you know, I hear. So, you know, huge. I've been to a couple Giants games. I think I went to, like, an A's game once.
Okay.
But I have no recollection of really any of it. But I've seen the Sandlot, yeah, probably more times than I've seen baseball on TV.
That's incredible. I think this also, like, I don't know if it was the Sandlot that kicked off this trend, but there was, in like, from like 92 through like maybe late 90s.
Just oh, I this remember trend. It well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I know you do. Yeah. It was basically, there were so many of these movies, kids, like the ragtag kids, the outcasts mm-hmm. who, and in the Sandlot, yeah. it's not like, you know, what it became was like the Mighty Ducks, the Big Green, Little Giants, yep. like movies like that, where it was like, oh, the underdogs form the team and nobody thinks they're going to be any good. And then they win the championship and they're amazing. Whereas the Sandlot, there aren't stakes like that. It's a little bit more of a like coming of age. Like this was the, I think it's the 50s, 60s. When
yeah,
it takes
it's
place.
Like the late, I think it's the early 60s
right place. Before like you know the Summer of Love and drugs and sex
yeah.
and rock and
so
roll,
what is that and that's interesting in and of itself right is I think maybe a lot of these 90s movies are made by directors who grew up in that time period and they're reflecting back on sort of like that what is childhood, you know, freedom look like at that time. And I think that's why we don't see a lot of those movies anymore, because being a kid is a very different experience now than it was before.
Yeah.
The idea of like, you know, the parents are at home doing their thing and they loosely expect you to be home by dinner time, but have no other questions, you know,
yeah,
like that,
latchkey,
that time
latchkey
is
kids.
Over.
Yeah. 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 Well, that was that something too? Cause you are at, I think at least a decade younger than me, if not more. So was there kind of a wistful nostalgia watching this thinking like, oh, I wish these were the days.
Well, I mean, like I was a little kid when I first started seeing this movie. And so now watching it, I mean, that's what it's supposed to do, right? Like if it yeah. fails to elicit nostalgia, even for something you've never experienced.
The movie is then, not a success.
Yeah, like that's what, like a movie should make you care about baseball, you know, whether you know how many diamonds, you know, are on a field or not or whatever, you know.
Right.
So, yeah, but I love this movie. And as a filmmaker, it's really interesting to me because I read a lot of scripts now, I'm starting to realize. And I recently watched this movie again and I went, I don't think this movie could get made. Like, I don't think this movie would pass a first round of script notes anymore. And not because it's bad, but because it follows such a different structure.
Yeah, there is, from what I recall, no specific. It really, it's definitely not a plot-driven movie. At a certain point, I remember the boy gets his dad's Babe Ruth signed baseball and it's like, we're gonna play with this, and the dog gets it, and then
it's not really character or plot driven. It's just
yeah,
kind of
it's
like
just moments
it's
of
just
like
happy.
And then
yeah.
yeah, we went to the pool, and then we went to the theme park, and then like they did
yeah.
like all that stuff. So it's
that's
and
exactly
I think,
what I mean. Yeah.
I think the Wonder Years was maybe the late 80s, early 90s, and this movie is very clearly like, you know, from the voice, like the voiceover narration and that kind of stuff. I think taking a cue from that, but then adding the specific sports angle of like summertime playing baseball. And again, I don't remember the exact timeline, but there is a part of me that feels like this. And I wonder, was this a success? It was shot for $7 million at the time, and it made $34 million. So it was a hit. It was a pretty substantial wow. hit. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if, like, you know, the Mighty Ducks and all those other films that came out that were also hits were spawned because of this. Like, let me
yeah,
see.
It could
so
have
Mighty,
been, which is...
Mighty Ducks was right before this. It was 92, but then so it was Mighty Ducks. And Sandlot is a very different film from Mighty Ducks from what I
right.
recall.
Although, what is interesting is that none of those films are werewolf movies.
That's right. So you have a theory, and we'll get more into this once we can describe plot specifics, but you have a a theory about The Sandlot that nobody in the history of life has put forth, which is that it's Sandlot true. Is actually a werewolf movie.
I wish I could have introduced it that way. You know, my name is Miles, and
I'm Sandlot, a werewolf.
The Sandlot is my favorite werewolf movie. It is true. And it took me many, many viewings to realize this, but when there are certain moments that if you line up and you really think about, and there's like a certain amount of math that has to be done, and we can talk about this, but if you really do like look into the lore here, it is, and this isn't I don't think this is a joke. I really believe this. It is very clearly a werewolf movie. One of the greats even, I think. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to that explanation. I believe you will. I've seen enough of The Sandlot. It's been a while. Like, I don't think I've watched any part of it since maybe I was in middle school or high school. It's been a while. So I remember enough of it to have fond memories of what I saw. I liked what I saw. I'm curious to see if I enjoy it now. I'm a big, as you know, as people who listen to this podcast know, I'm a big fan of coming of age movies. And this is very much my, like, this is a movie that I can see being on my wavelength for sure. So I'm curious.
This is your bottomless cup of tea.
It's exactly what it is. So I have a feeling I will enjoy it. I think there's going to be, I think it's going to be half and half. I think there's a part of me that's going to be like, oh, I should have seen this when I was younger. But then there's going to be the part of me that still recognizes the sweetness and the quality of what is there.
And depending on how you feel will determine whether or not we continue to be friends.
Yeah. So no pressure.
I mean, that's on you. It's out of my hands at this point.
It's true. It's true. Oh, man. All right. Well, we better get to it and find out.
Now available to own on video cassette.
All right, we are back. Miles, I thoroughly enjoyed The Sandlot. It is a lovely film. It's incredibly...
We can still be friends.
Yeah, I knew, great. And that was my greatest fear, is that this was going to, you know, put a pin in that. But it will, the friendship will live on, I'm happy to say. I do wish I'd seen it as a kid. Like, I wish I'd seen more than just the bits and pieces. I think if this is a film that I'd grown up with, I would love it and like fully embrace it the way many, many people do. But that said, it's much better. This does not fall into the category of films that you need to have grown up with to enjoy. I think
I'm a little concerned the friendship actually may not survive this.
Well, I mean, this will be great to get it on record. Like, if this is the moment our friendship ends, we will always have an audio recording.
I'm gonna have some pretty historical things to say about Star Trek if this continues.
That's okay. I understand. So I think, you know, I enjoyed it. Like, I, you know, it's definitely, as far as the nostalgia kind of 1950s, like, a lot of this stuff has been done before. And this movie doesn't have, I think, the depth of a film like Stand By Me, which it is definitely taking a bit of inspiration from. But that's not necessarily a bad thing. Like, that's a personal thing on my part. Like, I watch this and I'm like, oh, I wish there was a little bit more emotional oomph to it for that coming of age stuff. They try to do it with the stepdad plotline, but they don't quite stick the landing. But the movie is also such like a joyous celebration of youth and camaraderie and that time in the summer where you've got nothing on the agenda except hanging out with your friends and playing sports and going to the pool. That stuff, the more kind of leisurely stuff, was the stuff I loved the most. And I don't think that surprises you at all. Like, the stuff that's less plot driven is the stuff I really, really enjoyed. And I loved the stuff with the dog, of course. But I think the stuff of just them hanging out, the random like rival kids, the bullies who come that they have to play against, going to the pool and hitting on the cheerleader, going to the all that stuff was my favorite stuff. And if there's a true strength to this film, I think it's the cast. I think with kids,
absolutely.
Well, go ahead. What do you think?
I mean, it's just a stellar cast. The other thing I is the score. It's one of my favorite movie scores ever.
David Newman, and I know he's done other stuff. Hold on, you keep talking. I'm gonna look it up.
I mean, I said before, I think it's really unusual. I don't think a movie like this could be made today. I think that it wouldn't stand up to what we expect to see on a script.
Elaborate on that a little bit. You think it's just the structure?
Yeah, like usually there's like a fun and game section, a solid 10, 15 pages of characters meeting each other and having fun and stuff. And that's like more than the whole first act of this movie. Even two acts perhaps of this whole movie is just the fun and games. And you could argue like, that's not a story, but you could even argue like who is the main character of this movie? And usually that's a death sentence for a story. If you can't keep track of who's the A character, who's the B character, which plot belongs to who, the movie just doesn't make any sense. But this movie is not about one character or another. It's about the group. It's like about the soul of the group. And of the time period. And that's what I love about it, is somehow for me, the movie survives that. It's just such a wonderful picture of a feeling, I think, of nostalgia, even if, I didn't exist in that time. I just think it's beautiful, and I think it's funny, and the characters are so perfectly cast. They all have their own like unique quirks and traits. And
I think it speaks so much to the talents of those kids, because I could see on paper, and real quick, just in case anyone is still curious, David Newman did pretty much like every big movie score, not every big, like big movie, but a lot of like kids movies that you are familiar with through the 90s, like Jingle All the Way. He did the Flintstones movie. He did Tommy Boy, which is not a kids movie, Operation Dumbo Drop, The Phantom. So he did a lot. Just go look it up. It's actually insane. Galaxy Quest is one of the best movies ever.
Back
to your point, I think on paper, the kids, you could see, or I could see if this was something I was reading, like the kids don't have personalities. Like they don't really like, they don't all like stand out. They're all kind of the same voice. There are certain characters that could have just blended into the background, but because of the cast and the personality the kids bring to the table, there's a part of me, and it's unfortunate there's not, or I couldn't find a whole lot as far as like, I know that the two Rodriguez and what's his name, Smalls, those two kids, they hung out a little bit. The director, David Mickey Evans, had those two hang out before, like I think about a week or so before, to kind of bond, because they were supposed to be the besties of the group. But there's such a natural camaraderie, and there's such a naturalism to the performances that I am like, where are the behind the scenes tapes of these kids getting know each other and going That'd to like great. Improv camp and playing games and stuff, because it really does, they really do stand out. And with a kids movie starring all kids, if the kids aren't good, the movie can be a nightmare to watch. So I think that's why The Sandlot works for somebody like me who didn't grow up loving it.
Did they really send them all to improv camp?
No, I just said that because assumed that like they spent... It the only thing I could find was that the two, like the Rodriguez and Smalls did. Like they just spent time together, but all the kids are so great. And especially, what's his name? The actor who plays, Porter, Patrick Rinna.
Yeah.
Rinna. He's
fantastic. Did, like, one other movie. He did The Big Green.
Yeah. He was in The Big Green. He was great in that too.
Yeah.
Not as good as The Sandlot.
No, and that's what's so interesting is that all of these, for being so such iconic characters, they didn't really go on to do anything. Like a lot of these people just chose not to be actors or didn't continue, which is so, for such a classic movie, is interesting to me.
Yeah, they did, like, Rodriguez is in Mighty Ducks, I remember that. And Squints was the bully in Freaks and Geeks. He plays
Wait, are you serious?
Yeah, he plays Alan White in Freaks and Geeks.
Oh my God.
Isn't that great?
That's amazing. As you and I love Freaks and Geeks.
Yeah, so he is in that. That was the other big thing he did. And
Michael Squints Palidoris.
Yeah.
See, yes. I mean, this is such a big part of, you know, I learned Green Onions on the guitar, and I learned that was like one of the first things I wanted to know because it's really basic, right? Do, 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 do.
Yeah.
I learned Green Onions on the guitar.
You play guitar? I didn't know you play guitar.
I attempted.
Okay. You're not going to play something. Are you going to prove it right now on the air?
Yeah, air guitar. and then I had like, This Magic Moment by the Drifters, like, was like always on my phone, and like I always you know, any girl, I just wanted to, you know, especially like
you wanted to drown yourself so you just could kiss them,
just This Magic Moment, like, let's dance to this specific, like, I want to relive my Sandlot moment, you know, that's what I want. Being around a campfire, it's like there's like a death penalty if you don't say it. First you take the Malo, right? Then you put the chocolate on the gram. Then you roast the Malo. Then you put the cracker on the gram. And then you stuff. Like, you have to do it. You have to do it.
I wanted a s'more so bad. I did not eat a s'more while I was watching this film.
That's,
and
a shame.
I think it really is. It really is. There's a lot of, there are many great quotes in this film. I knew about your Killing Me Smalls. For a while, yep. I didn't know that was from this movie. But,
and our friend Brendan Kelly and his wife dressed up as Wendy Preffercorn and Squints for Halloween. That's my contact photo for him. And what's the other like iconic?
Forever was one that
forever,
I really liked.
Forever. Yeah, it's like an endlessly quotable movie.
Yeah.
And like I said, like I don't watch movies twice, but this is one that I will sit down and I will watch again and again and again and again and again.
I wanted to ask you, I don't know if I asked you to go in depth into it in part one, but like, it's your favorite movie. And what is it, do you think, about it that makes you want to watch it again and again and again?
I think every time I watch it, I'm more impressed by it, that I catch something that I didn't catch before. Like, you know, we'll get to how it's actually a werewolf movie at one point that I catch something. And then, like, you know, as a filmmaker, I catch things that I'm really impressed by, like the way a character is put together, the way the story works.
Or the way the lack of story works.
Yeah, like somehow it works despite all the rules, and it's so endlessly charming that I find it to be sort of a lesson. And I usually take a note when I watch it, and I sort of keep that with me. And then, of course, it's one of those many movies where then they tried to replicate it, and it's just the Sandlot 2, you know.
Well, I think it's funny, going back to your point about how you couldn't make this movie today, I think there are obviously films being made that are more unconventional, low-budget indie films, but as far as a mainstream kids movie, yeah, absolutely. Like, you wouldn't get away with this. Like,
no,
and I think some of the weaknesses of The Sandlot come from what I feel were probably studio notes. Like, I can see the studio, like, I can see the studio saying, we need an emotional arc. So could you fit in the story with the stepdad? I see a world in which those were reshoots for this film, where it's like, they don't involve any of the other kids except Smalls. It's just him and his parents, because the parents never interact with the kids. And I could just see that being something they add later on, even though, well, I guess the argument against that is the baseball.
I don't think it's that disjointed, but I will agree with you that there are certain things like Oh my God. Okay. Just keep talking.
You're good. I jump in when you remember it. But like that, they have a lot of stuff in the beginning that's like setting things up. Like there's something behind the fence. Like they show like the dog growling behind the fence a bunch of times. And I'm like, yes, I get it. And then inexplicably, Smalls, when the ball goes over, he's like, oh, I'll go get it. Even though he's the one who's been like, oh, there's something behind that fence and I shouldn't, like, all the kids are like, don't go. And he's like, it's fine. What's the problem? And I'm like, what do you mean? What's the problem? You've been staring at the fence, listening to the monster growl behind it. Things like that, where I'm like, that maybe the Disney people were like, or not Disney. I think this is Fox, now owned by Disney. But I feel like a studio head was probably like, we need to set more stuff up at the beginning because it's too plotless. So keep showing that there's a dog behind that fence and then we'll get to it at the end of the movie.
I think so. This is what I was gonna say is, okay, is I think that if it was a modern movie, the studio notes would have gone as follows, which is like, all right, like it clearly has to be Benny's story. You know, Benny, his last name's Rodriguez, so like, why is he out on the baseball field all the time? Like, does he have trouble at home? Is he like from a low income part of the neighborhood, you know, like let's show him with his parents, you know, maybe he has like difficulties at home and that's why he like loses himself in baseball. And, you know, like that's why he wants to be a legend, is because like his dad couldn't be or something like that. Like they'd have made it like a minority victory story, I think.
Yeah.
Whereas something kind of beautiful about it, it's almost like there is such a like equitable nature to the characters that none of them take up more space than the other. And it's like, we don't need to know Benny's backstory for him to take charge. And we don't have to, you know, he doesn't have to have this, arc
of like, haunted,
you know, overcoming his, like, you know, like some like dark home life or something like that, which I think in a modern movie would absolutely be there.
I see what you're saying. I think there's an innocence when you're that age where you just don't think about it, that I appreciate. The Sandlot is kind of like, they're all here, they're all having fun, and that's it. And on the one hand, I appreciate that. On the other hand, while I don't need the mellow, dramatic, like, Rodriguez's dad beats him every night and baseball's his escape from reality. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I would have liked murdered the movie. Yeah.
I wouldn't have said no to a little emotional depth, like specifically in the relationship between Smalls and Rodriguez.
Some more of those scenes. Sure.
Yeah. Like I would have liked to have seen, you know, when, cause at the end, Rodriguez going over the fence to get the ball, I think dramatically it would have made more sense for Smalls to do it. Like Smalls to have, like, he's grown and now he's, you know? So it's like,
That's what I'm saying, is like in a modern movie, there would have been a studio note that says, we're not making this until it's clear who the main character is.
Yeah, right. You know? And it could have, like, I see a scenario, like there's a version where it might not have worked, except that the movie's so charming that it's fine and you don't really mind. Mm-hmm. That said, it would have been nice to get a little bit more of like some genuine friendship moments. Like you get a lot of the, like, you know, shallow is a mean word, but it's a lot of like, oh, we're hanging out, we're making s'mores, we're going to the pool and we're in love with the girl, but it doesn't go deeper than the surface. Like these kids are bonded by baseball and the fun they have, but it would have been nice to get a little bit more Stand By Me emotional depth where these kids.
It's so funny you bring up Stand By Me, because I don't feel the same way about Stand By. Like I remember watching Stand By Me and going like feeling so underwhelmed by Stand By Me.
The reason I keep bringing up Stand By Me is because it's like a film that takes place in the 50s that features like a group of kids living in that era with voiceover narration that's bookended by present day scenes and with a great sound, with a great soundtrack and like
tragedy, like though, yeah, like it's
it's a different movie. It's not, the Sandlot is not Stand By Me. The reason I keep using Stand By Me is because there, Sandlot is definitely taking a lot from that that script, like that feel, those emotions, those beats. Like it wants to be that kind of nostalgic movie to the point where it's going with the narration and going after the same decade and time period.
but that, they don't like, have the they don't have the ridiculous hats. Like they don't have no, they don't have Small's like 4 foot long baseball cap.
Yeah, is... and to your point, you know, Sandlot doesn't want to be that movie. It doesn't need to be that movie. But I would have. I think for me personally, for this to ascend to something that I would have loved, I would have wanted that, like the camaraderie to go a little bit deeper. Like,
yeah, I hear
Smalls gets picked on and Rodriguez kind of takes him under his wing. Rodriguez in the film, and this is kind of how it happened. Like when you're a kid, you don't like, you just like, hey, you're my best friend now. Like you don't need to think that much about it. There doesn't need to be a like, oh, you explained to me your emotions and now I understand you and therefore you're my best friend now.
Tell me about your tragic home life.
Yeah, it is as simple as Rodriguez saying, hey, let's go play ball. I don't have a mitt. I'll get you a mitt. You know, it's there's a simplicity to this film that I love. But I also like, you know, how I think it would have been great to have an extra beat between Smalls and Rodriguez right before Rodriguez has his Babe Ruth dream, where Smalls is basically like, my life is over. And Rodriguez is like, I need to do something to help this kid. And it's there, but it's like it's missing the extra beat of like Rodriguez is doing it because I need to help this kid. He's my friend and I love him. Yeah. And I'm going to take the sacrifice and maybe get killed by a giant dog. So he doesn't have to.
There's a beat in mid 90s that I really like. Jonah Hill's movie where the sort of Rodriguez equivalent, I don't remember the characters' names, but like the oldest kid who takes Sunburn under his wing, who's like Smalls, right? He's like, he'll do anything to be a part of the group. Mm. He takes him under his wing and says, you know, I want to tell you something, a little something about all these guys you're hanging out with. You know, this guy, he has potential, but he just like, he drinks and he smokes and he gets high and he's lost. He's like so lost. And, you know, I'm worried about him. And, you know, fourth grade, we call him fourth grade, but you know what the real reason is? Like, he stopped going to school in fourth grade, man. Like, his family's so poor, he can't even afford socks. Like, that, I think that's the direct quote.
Yeah.
And it's sort of, I think that's the kind of moment that would have been cool in the Sandlot to be like
something, and this is a very innocent, simplistic, nostalgic film, and simplistic I don't mean that in a bad way, but I think somewhere between this and mid-90s it could have used a couple more of those moments and really kind of cemented the bittersweet nature of childhood and growing up, because the movie even has at the end, again this is ripped from Stand By Me, but like the this is where this person ended up, this is where that person ended
up. God,
this
I
is
love
where
that.
This person ended
I
up.
I love that
and ending. It's well it's not I'm not complaining about it, like I think it's great, but it doesn't like typically that is kind of it's like a thing that is implemented to showcase kind of the like childhood, it's gone forever, and this it's more of a just it's a fun thing, it's a device that they use for fun versus kind of the like growing up you're never a kid again, like life goes
I disagree
on.
I think that's exactly what it's about.
Okay.
I totally think it's exactly what it's about. It's like they move away, we never saw him again, this guy went on to do this guy, and it's humorous, right? Like the twins invented mini malls and like, you know, things like that, but it's the visual of the kids disappearing and then the baseball diamond stays the same without them. Mm-hmm. It gets left behind, and then in the second one it's like aged, right, with the kids who took care of it and were there every day being there. And then the girls come and they spoil everything by putting grass
on
it.
You have seen The Sandlot too.
I have seen The Sandlot too.
Oh my God. All right. I want to hear your thoughts on that. No. I want to hear your thoughts on this in a little bit.
I just like the feedback on The Sandlot too is just like, if you read it anywhere, there's like, they ruined it by putting girls in it. Like it's about,
it's like, that's probably the least of that film's problems.
It's like, I don't think that's it, but that was like, it's the most noticeable difference, because the first one is about what it's like to be a boy, right?
Yeah,
so then
yeah.
They expanded that. It's like, well, all right. You know, now it's like boys and girls getting along and like having to accept each other and like learn about each other and get along with each other, which is nice. But it's like, while it's not the issue with the movie's story, it's the thing that like stands out the most. So if you don't like the movie, like that's why you'll see
that's the thing.
Reviews just like, why'd they have to... they think they're doing something nice, and they're like,
girls are icky. Girls are icky.
Yeah, it's a girls are icky story.
How do you feel about the stepdad stuff in this movie?
Oh, see, I like it. And I don't think, like, again, he's such a small part. He just bookends the story. But I think that's fine because the story is about a place outside of the house. So the movie takes place completely outside of the house. It's about him trying to find his place in his new town. And so when you have the stepdad, it's like his what he learns outside and sort of like growing up and like making friends and gaining his own confidence and stuff like that is the core of the story. So the stepdad is just like the opening and closing image of his introduction to baseball. So at first he can't play catch. He doesn't know. He wants to connect with his dad, but he doesn't really know about or care about baseball, especially. And then he comes to really care about baseball and then to really appreciate his stepdad's obsession with his special baseball collection, right? And then he contributes toward it. And so I think that's like the role of the stepdad. I think it would have been a waste of time to go back and like show him like trying and failing to connect with his stepdad in the middle of the movie. Like, no, let's go to the circus or whatever and chew Big Chief. Like that's what this is about.
That's what the movie's really about. Yeah. Well, the reason I ask is cause I feel the same way. I didn't want the stepdad in the middle, but I also didn't need, again, that's a Stand By Me thing where it's like the son has an estranged relationship from his parents, but it's because the son, his older brother, who is the superstar, died, and he's like the runt, and the parents don't like him or appreciate him, so there's this estrangement there. Again, emotional depth, but in this it's like I don't, and this is gonna get really nitpicky and people listening are gonna get really annoyed with me, but it's like, Miles loves when people hate me. It's one of his favorite things.
On the planet. Just like to watch.
You just like to watch. Yeah, no, I was going to say, well, it's like, why does it need to be a stepdad? Like, couldn't it just be a dad like that he has? It just, like, that you could have made him the dad and just had like, oh, the dad doesn't like his son that much because the son is growing up to be kind of nerdy instead of the baseball player. I don't need...
Because it's about how his life is uprooted, and he's coming to a new place he doesn't recognize. He has no friends, and even his how home inside is completely different. That he has a new father figure that he doesn't know, that he hasn't spent time with. So it's like everything about his life is totally different. So if it had been his dad, like his regular dad, it wouldn't have been different. Could have been craving a better relationship with him, but I think it sends a signal of like, wow, this kid's got absolutely nothing consistent in his life other than his mom.
I'll give you that. But then also I think the bookends of the stepdad don't work. Like it's like for that emotional beat it would have needed to be a little bit more like the way you described it to me sounds great, but I don't think that's in the movie. I think that's a lot of, you've seen this movie more than any other film and you've been able to pull these little gems
I've seen it more than the editor.
Yeah, you probably, but no, it's a film that delights in the little moments. It's a film that doesn't need to go deeper than the surface. And it's a film that like any kid really growing up with this movie is going to benefit from having this movie in their life because it is so sweet and it's so innocent and it's so fun and carefree. You don't need the darkness of Stand By Me until you're a little bit older. Sandlot is it's what you need when you're younger. It's that fun and that sweetness. And, you know, the worst thing that happens is your baseball gets eaten by a dog. And that's all you need. I also, you know, what's funny is the methods they use to get the baseball back. I do love, first of all, there were too many. You could have cut out a couple, but I do love that they had a couple great inventions.
Yes.
The dog destroys their crazy erector set, the sticks and the devices they use. And after the dog destroys these things, they're like, let's put one of our friends in
yes.
in a harness.
But that's but it's so great because it shows because there's a quote in the movie. There's a quote in the movie where they say, at least with regard to Benny, they say to like Benny loves baseball more than life. Or to Benny Rodriguez, baseball is life. And that's how all these kids feel about it, is that like Babe Ruth was less than a god and more than a man. So it's the quote, right? So they are so committed to protecting this baseball, right? That like they said, you know, that the baseball is worth more than your life, right? How much is that baseball worth? More than your life, man, right? Which shows the extremes of how they feel about baseball, that they're willing to put their life on the line for a signature. And I think that's so good. That's so
the,
good.
The editor, just make that the first one, the kid being lowered in there. And then like just recut it so that that's the first one, because it makes no sense that they did three or four with these kids are terrified. Don't go over the fence. We're never getting our baseball back. But then they, after three or four attempts, they were like, all right, now just lower our friend in. I'm like, if that was the first cut, that's okay. But
desperation. They're so desperate.
But they would have gotten their baseballs back before if they were that desperate.
What is your Babe Ruth signature ball? Like in your life? What is the artifact? The childhood artifact that like, even if you don't have to be in possession of it.
You put me on the spot. I don't have... I can't think of anything. I have a
Superman signed by Christopher Reeve.
Yeah, let's just say that's what it is.
Yeah.
I do have, how about this? This is the, and what's funny is this is the only thing that came to mind. I have a Smallville poster signed by Tom Welling, who played Clark Kent in Smallville, which I don't know where it is. It's clearly not the most prized possession.
but certainly
a prized possession and Superman related. Now go ahead.
Yeah. That's what I'm just saying is
if I launched that poster over a fence,
would you go get it?
I think I'd be okay. I'd be okay. I'm like, you know, that Smallville poster is pretty cool, but I'm not going to risk my life. I'd be more excited to see if I could befriend the dog, honestly. Like, I'd be like, you're not so bad. You're not so bad. Yeah, the beast. I would befriend the beast. And I love it. It's classic. It is a classic moment. The beast gets, I love the chase. It's just wonderful. And
tickle the beast.
I love that the beast, when they are first encountering the beast, that the beast is very obviously like a giant puppet, because to these kids, that's part of the fantasy. The dog doesn't need to look real in those moments. The dog doesn't need to look real until it's a real dog, and then they have to rescue it, which I loved. And I loved the shot of just this giant dog licking the little boy. And that was my, like, that's what I want to be, the boy, and I want that dog to lick my face. That's what I was thinking. Like, I was like,
I had a dog that was a little bigger, I think, than the beast.
Really?
Yeah, I did. He was 180 pounds.
My God.
Yeah. He was extra large for a Newfoundland. And he was sort of like that, where he was, hadn't for a very brief time. But he was just so sweet, and he was so enormous looking that like everyone would get out of his way on the path, you know, like he took up like the whole path if you took him on a walk. And I remember there was like a security car that pulled over because they thought we were walking a cow.
And could they ride this dog?
A child could absolutely ride this dog. It was like very wide.
That's my dream to have a dog that big.
But then he just drew water falling out of his face all the time. Like, just like the beast.
That's like my dream. Like, I love... I would have been delighted. I think that's where the film, I couldn't relate. I was like a crazy dog. I'm gonna become this dog's friend, and the movie would be over. I would knock the fence on the dog immediately, and then be like, "Oh, I saved you!" And it would just be a plot to get the dog to love me. But
wow, that's extreme.
Tell me and tell the world the werewolf theory. about
so
the same
it's
lot.
Not so much a theory, it's definitely
it's
real.
The truth. It is real. Okay.
Yeah, so upon like the 13th or 14th viewing,
let's be clear, this is a theory, this is an exclusive, nobody else on the planet as far as you are aware.
Yes,
has
as far
this
as I'm aware.
Interpretation. Okay.
And I'm really serious about it too. Like sometimes fan theories, you know, they're just like fun to think about, but this one I really think this is a real thing. And if not, then I'm just smarter than the screenwriter, which also could be true.
You've proven that already.
It could also be true. So The Sandlot is a werewolf movie, and I'm going to make my case. So there's this moment. I always felt that every part of the movie had a reason for being there. And there's the one scene where Benny is pickling the beast, and he runs through the movie theater, and the movie stops to show you the movie that's playing, which is I think it's called The Werewolf. It's like
yeah,
a really old
Man
Academy Award winner.
Some werewolf.
The Wolfman, I think. Yeah, I think it's The Wolfman. So I'm a terrible, terrible filmmaker. So it always stopped me of like, why? Like, okay, werewolf, that's a dog. Like, and it shows a clip of the movie, and it says, you know, if you get bit by a werewolf, then you become
it's
one.
It's very, very specific to the point where you start to think, is there something,
yep.
Is there an underlying theme here that we're supposed to be taking?
And the next quote from the movie is, he bit you, didn't he? And then they continue the chase. And it always sort of irked me. I thought, like, if I was editing this, that would be the first thing I would cut. I'd just have him run through the theater, and it just seems out of place. And I started to really think about it. I realized that the whole movie leads up to the transformation of Benny Rodriguez into a legend. And so it starts with the original language at the beginning of the movie, which is Benny tells Smalls when he asks, who's Babe Ruth? Who is she, right? He says, Babe Ruth was less than a god, but more than a man, like Hercules or something. And then we learn the name of the dog. The dog's name isn't the beast. The dog's name is Hercules.
Mm-hmm.
Less than a monster, right? But he's also more than a dog. He's a legend. And the story that they tell, they call it the legend of the beast, is what the story that Squints tells. Okay. When Benny has his dream with Babe Ruth coming into his room, Babe Ruth says, you get one chance in your whole life to be a legend, right? It comes by and it spits on your shoes is the words
right.
he uses.
Right.
It spits on your shoes. That's like the only time you have an opportunity for greatness, right? So then he's running away from the beast, and he runs to the movie theater, and we stop. We see that sequence about werewolves.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm sort of reading this here as well. Then the beast bites Benny immediately after that screening. He bites Benny, okay? In the beginning of the movie, it says, this is the story of how Benny became a neighborhood legend, okay? Mm-hmm. So he bites Benny, and then they have the whole, you know, ending sequence, and then it shows Benny all grown up. And he's playing baseball, Benny the Jet Rodriguez, mm-hmm. and the MLB, right? And he has a jersey on. And what number is he wearing? Number 3,
mm-hmm.
which is Babe Ruth's number.
Right.
Okay. So now we're going to do a little bit of math. First
oh,
off,
God.
Benny,
right. you
Benny
do the
Rodriguez.
Math. I don't want to do any math, please.
Benny Rodriguez is BR, just like Babe Ruth.
Okay.
Okay. The beast, they say, the beast lived to be 199 years old in dog years, which makes no sense because there's no way, even when you make that translation, it makes the beast like way more than 20 years old. It's impossible.
Mm.
Babe Ruth lived to be 53 in dog years it translates to like 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When Squints is telling the story in the treehouse about the legend of the beast, he says that this story started about 20 years ago. 199 dog years is 28 human years. So Squints is off by 20. 8 years is the average lifespan of an English Mastiff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you go back 8 years, it's about the time when you see the year of like you can tell which year it is because of when they're like they have the whole cake ceremony and stuff. It says the like July 4th something something, right? Which is roughly the year that Babe Ruth died.
Mm.
So the beast is the is Hercules, just like Babe Ruth. He's the reincarnation of Babe Ruth. He bites Benny, and Benny becomes the new Babe Ruth. It's a werewolf story.
I'm into it.
It's there's just too much data.
This needs to go somewhere on a trivia page, on Wikipedia, on the internet. It needs to blow up, and it needs to be addressed by the filmmaker, David Mickey Evans. If you're listening, and I know you are, we need a confirmation. We need an affirmation.
I got something wrong. Okay, so Babe Ruth does not die.
Scratch that. Okay.
Babe Ruth doesn't die in it died in 1948, which is too soon. But if you count on dog years, then it ends up being...
Then it's correct. Okay. All right. Followed about a percentage of that, but you seem convinced, and
I'm so convinced.
Convinced me, and I'm into it.
Take the math out of it. Babe Ruth.
I would love to do nothing.
Hercules shares the name with Babe Ruth and the dog.
Yes. Yes.
The dog is a legend. Babe Ruth is a legend. The legend bites the legend, and then
and it transfers the legend power into the next big. I'm into it. I see it. It's not. Absolutely. It is not crazy. I think you're onto something. Speaking of onto something, I've no intention of ever watching The Sandlot 2, ever.
Is that's kind of sexist? I think
you. It's definitely. it's just because there are girls in it, and I can't stand that. I need you to tell me: is The Sandlot 2 basically the same movie but with girls in it? Like, do they do a lot of the same things?
I remember there's sort of like a weaker version of everything that happens.
Yes,
in the first one. Like there's a pool party, they have a. I think that the girls live like where the beast like that property gets renovated or whatever, and then they live there and they have like an outdoor like stand up pool, and they invite the boys over and they all like have a pool party, which is sort of like a less interesting version of what goes on at the like community pool in the first one. It's just like a lot of that.
There's a dog in it. James Earl Jones is in that one too.
I don't remember that.
It was written and directed by David Mickey Evans, the same guy who did the first one. That's so sad. It's not. He probably made a lot of money. He basically wrote the same movie again. It even says, like Benny Rodriguez from the first movie, David decides to go over the wall to retrieve. I guess it's a model. It's a spaceship. A space shuttle model that was built by a character's father. So Sandlot 2, I will benefit from not watching.
It has Uma Thurman in it. Does it?
No, it doesn't. No, it does not.
Oh, that just
came up. You're
lying
to me. What did you type in?
I don't know. I'm on Letterboxd and I typed it in.
What?
A decade has passed in the small town where the original Sandlot gang banded together during the summer of 62. Okay, let's do the math on Babe Ruth there. It's 1948, 1962. God. What's the conversion there?
Don't ask, please. I don't want to think about it. Just the more you say numbers, the more you
20 minus
say add,
6
subtract, multiply,
16,
it hurts.
20 minus 6 is 14.
I wonder, you know what would make me sad is if the mere existence of Sandlot 2, which is enough to make me miserable, just that it exists, if its existence somehow refutes or denies your theory, like somehow its existence cancels out your theory for some reason, that would make me sad. That would be the worst crime it would be bad enough that it exists, but that it ruins your theory as well.
Yeah, 199 in dog years. So the babe lived to be 98 in dog years. So he's short by about 100 years. Okay. 102.
How are we still talking about this? I thought we agreed that you're right. 14, like, it's a good
14 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a difference of 14 years. So I'm right.
You are right. I never doubted you.
Wait a second. A campy romp back to the dugout where nine new kids descend upon the diamond. God,
I don't wanna...
to discover that a descendant of the beast lives in Mr. Myrtle's backyard.
Oh no.
They changed the name to The Great Fear.
Yeah. This just reading this description depresses me. And it just depresses. I thought this was like some knockoff where like a D-level filmmaker just like made a made-for-TV, but it's the same guy. It's the same filmmaker.
And the kids look the same too.
Yeah,
like, you have a kid that sort of resembles Porter, and you got like the tall, skinny kid.
Yeah, the small kid.
And there was a rumor that all the original guys were going to come back for a third one.
I mean, do you?
Oh, there is another one. There's The Sandlot Heading Home by William Gere in 2007. A successful professional baseball player gets his ego in check via an unreality check where he travels back in time to his boyhood Sandlot playing days. Wow.
What?
I know what I'm doing tonight.
What? This is... I can't... No. Please stop. Please.
It's ranked
slightly
lower than The Sandlot, too.
Please, I don't want to know about any more Sandlot sequels. That the fact that there was a second one was bad enough, but the fact that there are more. Now, look, if you'd made a second Sandlot with the same cast, like a couple years after the first one, like that would be one thing. But not these. No, don't tell me. I'm already like, you're breaking my heart. You're killing me.
There's one cool thing. There's one cool thing about The Sandlot, too. Which is in The Sandlot one, Benny takes off his shoes and he puts on PF Flyers.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And the second one, the kid's already wearing PF Flyers. He takes them off and he puts on Converse.
Oh,
so
damn.
There's this nice little like transition of like pop culture from one generation to the next, which I thought
brilliant.
Was
brilliant.
That's a good
brilliant, brilliant
choice.
Filmmaking. All right. Well, yeah. What else? Is there anything else about The Sandlot that needs to be said?
You play ball like a girl.
Why would you say that to me? You're right, though. I mean, well, is that sexist?
It's the central quote of the movie.
You play ball like a girl. It's the ultimate insult. And I think that that is where we will leave it. So The Sandlot, we're going to give our final ratings now. So on a scale from 1 to 5, with 5 being the highest, 1 being the lowest, how many... Smalls would you kill? How many Smalls would kill you? How many Smalls would kill you in honor of this film?
Does that even make how many Smalls?
How many? How many? Yeah, how many Smalls would kill you to honor this film?
What does that even mean?
You don't have to ask questions about what does it mean. Just
all right.
One
I give
or
it.
Five.
I give it five. Okay. Five of whatever. Five bags of popcorn, two bowls of dog food, and one baseball signed by
Babe
Ruth.
That's probably what I
should
have
done.
The
Sultan of SWAT, the King of
Crash,
and the Colossus of Clout.
How many baseballs signed by Babe Ruth would you get? I'll give it right in the, middle. I'll give it a solid 3.
All right.
And baseballs and times that I was killed by Smalls.
Why would Smalls kill anyone?
You're killing me, Smalls. So it's
he killed you.
Are you kidding me? This
too
is
long.
Not your favorite movie anymore.
That's like what is going on?
What are you talking about? All right. Well, Miles, you are a lovely human being, and I'm so glad I have you in my life. Thank you for introducing me to this film that it has been missing. It's a frame that's been missing from my life for far too long. So thank you for amending this. And you are an incredibly talented filmmaker and you have things in the works, but like, is there anything people should follow of yours on Instagram or social, or where should people go to learn more about you and the amazing stuff you're doing?
Well, first, I love you too. And then I will hold back any negative things about Star Trek, Superman or otherwise.
Thank you. Thank you.
My handle for my film is called Under the Lights Film on Instagram, and it's also on Facebook. And there's a website called underthelightsfilm.com where I made a movie about taking my my experience with epilepsy and trying to do some representation properly. So had a lot of great success with the short. Now we're making the feature. So
yes.
Go learn all about it on the website, underthelightsfilm.com. And that is my plug. Done. Over.
It is one of the best short films, if not the best short film I have seen, and I mean it, and I'm very excited to see this feature when it's finally out there in the world.
And Sean was my writing buddy through the whole thing.
That's the reason why I love it so much. I'm just trying to plug myself.
It's so much influence. Yeah.
I don't need to be plugged anymore. But you can find me, if you would so desire, on Twitter at @YeSeanDerman. If you tweet at me, I will say hello. I'm not very active there, but you can also find me on Letterboxd. SeanDerman05 is my handle. Thank you everyone for listening. Thank you, Miles, again. You're beautiful. And we will see you at the movies. Until I kiss you.